This is talking with A.D. Focker over the phone from Groningen to the Sterwacht in Utrecht on 13 September 78.
Okay, now, if you could first tell me just what your background was, what your education was, and how you came into contact with radio astronomy.
Yes, I got my education at Leiden Observatory, and, well, that's starting 1945.
Mm-hmm.
Until 1951. So that was just the time that radio astronomy started, and at that time Van der Hulst gave this course on radio astronomy.
Oh, yes, right.
I think the first course that was given
mm-hmm.
all over the world. But during my study, I had no occupation with radio astronomy. But after I had finished my studies, there was an opening at these PDT services. It was a new position.
Yes.
And then I was recommended to Dr. De Voogd, who was in charge of that section.
Right.
And, well, at that time there were only, well, astronomers were still in the making. It was just these post-war years.
Right.
I got this position now, in 1952.
Let me just ask you now, were you studying astronomy at Leiden?
Yes.
And what was the position for? What was it to do?
Well, I had made a little contribution on commentary work, Tales of Comets.
Yes.
And also I had made measurements of visual double stars. And I made some photometry together with Dr. Walraven.
Uh-huh.
That means I worked out his results. He had made observations.
Right, right.
I prepared them for publication.
And what did the PTT want you to do, though?
They wanted me to work on solar activity. They were just building some radio astronomical equipment. At the same time, they attracted an engineer, Mr. Neubauer. And so this was just starting, and I was there just to make the astronomical evaluation, try to find out what are the properties of solar radio emission and to study solar activity.
Right. Now, this equipment they were building, where was this?
This was at the receiving station at Nederhorstenberg, you know, in the neighborhood of Hilversum.
In the neighborhood of Hilversum, so this is not at Kootwijk.
That's to say that the observations were made at the Nederhorstenberg station, but the laboratory where the receivers were built was in Kootwijk.
I see. So you spent time at both places then?
Well, I was more connected to the Nederhorstenberg station, but my colleague, Mr. Neubauer, was more in charge of the laboratory in Kootwijk.
I see.
But the office where all the observations were collected was in The Hague, where also the chief of the section, Mr. De Voogd, had his residence.
I see. Well, let me ask you, it seems a bit strange to me to have the PTT monitoring the sun. Was this because of some special interest that De Voogd had, or was it really necessary for communications?
Yes, it was. The section would not have been created if not Mr. De Voogd himself had a vivid interest in the new radio astronomy.
I see.
In astronomy at large. And he convinced his superiors that it would be worthwhile to follow the activity of the sun.
I see. And even though it did not have direct practical applications. Most of it anyway.
It was hoped so, and by that time, most radio communication went by radio through the ionosphere, so the ionosphere at that time was still important
right. For
radio communications. And the idea was sensible, but it was hard to predict, of course, how important it might be.
Right. Well, what was De Voogd's background? Was he an ionosphere physicist or a radio engineer? Or?
Well, he was an engineer, but part of his career, he was head of a telephone district. So he was an electrical engineer,
but
an electrical engineer. Right. Not particularly specialized in radio, but, well, there's quite a general background.
Right, I see. And then he was an administrator also in the PTT. When you say he was head of a district.
Yes, in the country, I think, in the province of North Brabant.
Right.
For a number of years, I don't know how long, he was director of the so-called telephone district.
Okay. Now, how did you decide what were the first things that you were going to do when you're starting up a new facility?
Well, it was just to make sense of the observations, which at that time were made at 200 megahertz and 540, just analyzing the records. So trying to find out what the sun produced, what were the phenomena, and what were their relations with especially ionospheric disturbances.
I see. So you just continuously monitored the sun and built up a lot of data.
Yes.
And were you aware of the work that, for instance, Wilde had done and so forth?
Yes, of course. We followed the literature and we went to congresses, for instance, Total Bank. So we had a number of contacts.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, we also were host to an excursion of ERSI, I think, in 1954.
When ERSI met in...
ERSI had a general meeting in The Hague.
Right, right.
And after the meeting, there was organized an excursion to our receiving station.
I see.
And to Kootwijk.
But now, what did you think that you could contribute to solar radio astronomy at that stage that other groups were not working on?
Oh, that's hard to say. Of course, the most pioneering observations were made in Australia.
Right.
So I cannot say that we were pioneering. Of course, many of the things we observed had been observed by the Australians. Of course, we were not really a scientific institute, but we tried to make significant contributions. And so I collected, we collected material in the IGY, the International
Right.
Physical Years. And you find the results more or less in my thesis, 1960.
Right. This was at Leiden.
Yes.
Right.
So we not really made discoveries, but we tried to analyze in detail the things that that were then, well, type of noise terms outbursts. Of course, the spectral classification was developed in Australia, but just we tried to find out how is it related to sunspots, what are the properties of these type 1 bursts, how are they polarized, and things like that.
Right. Well, the polarization work was something that was not very common at that time. Isn't that correct? Or?
Yes, I think only a few stations made polarization observations.
Did that give some important clues as to what was going on in the bursts?
Not directly. Even now, most of the bursts have circular polarization, but some, especially at the limb of the sun, are unpolarized.
Yes.
There's not yet a satisfactory explanation of that. So, at that time, of course, you could say, well, the circular polarization should mean that there is a magnetic field. So that was clear. And you also could say that the polarization was mostly related to the preceding sunspots. So sunspots are bipolar.
Yes.
Nevertheless, one center of activity mostly produced one sense of circular polarization, which is mostly related to the polarity of the preceding sunspot. So these things were verified, but the polarization had no direct clue to the explanation of the starburst.
I see.
And it had not direct impact on the solar terrestrial relationships. It is just a property of noise terms. But unfortunately, it doesn't tell very much about the mechanism. The more so because some st- Tomrest are just unpolarized, and it is intriguing until the present.
I see. So what you're saying is that much of the data that you gathered in the late 50s still is not really satisfactorily explained.
Yes, that's a peculiar thing, that many of the properties of type 1 sperms were known, or got known at that time.
Yes.
But at present, we still do not understand the storm burst. We had recently a meeting in Toulouse.
Yes.
An European solar meeting, and associated to that meeting was a workshop of people that are interested in type 1 noise types. And this was just organized because we realized that still we understand very little of the type 1 noise type.
Hmm. Now, what about at this time? Were you in close contact with optical solar astronomers?
Well, we had contacts with Helen Dodson from McMahon-Hilbert Observatory.
At Michigan, right.
And there was, yes, and I should say that we had two other stations, one at in the Far East, in New Guinea.
Yes.
At that time was still under Dutch government.
Right.
And another station in Suriname.
Mm-hmm.
In South America, which is also now independent. And these three stations, together with the Midwestern Bear Station, had a full-time patrol of solar radio emissions.
Right,
so
right.
So any time of the day, we got the records and we could find the burst that occurred. And Helen Dodson at that time was interested to receive copies of these records.
Mm-hmm. And she was trying to correlate with optical flares?
Yes, I think that was the reason she wished to have them. Yes.
Do you happen to know if she's still alive, and if so, where she is?
Helen Dodson?
Yes.
I think she is still at McMahon-Hilbert. I think she's retired, but she is still active.
So she's retired and living near McMath.
I understand so, yes.
Okay, thank you. Did you have any contact with the group at Utrecht, who work on the sun, of course?
Yes, we had good contact. Somewhat later, maybe 1954 or 55, Dr. De Groot here at Utrecht also made some measurements, but this was not very elaborate,
mm-hmm.
But we knew each other, and sometimes we discussed our reports. We had contact with Professor Minnett, and he was very much interested in what we were doing.
Right.
And later, about 1960-62, the observations at Nederholtenberg were also carried on under the responsibility of the Utrecht Observatory.
Where did De Groot make his observations?
Initially, just in Utrecht, on the roof of the new building.
I see.
And later on, in Ringelo. In 1958, the big Ringelo mirror was inaugurated, and in a smaller dish, such as a Würzburg mirror, he made also observations at some six or eight single frequency channels around 200 megahertz.
Right.
And later on, he wrote a thesis on these measurements.
I see. Let me ask you a general question about what do you think have been the main contributions that radio astronomy has made to solar work up through about 1960 or so?
You mean the technique of
yes,
astronomy?
Yes, right.
Well, I think you have then to look to the Australians who first introduced the technique of radio spectrography,
mm-hmm.
and also in interferometry. Of course, these, especially interferometry, which has also, of course, its application to galactic sources, was very important for radio work, too. Perhaps not that spectacular. Already at that time, the very spectacular discoveries were made in the field of galactic and extragalactic astronomy. But the techniques also were very important for
That's correct.
Solar work, and especially, of course, the swept frequency spectrograph had only solar applications.
What new things about the sun do you think were the main things that radio astronomy revealed?
I think especially the aspects of solar activity, which we had no idea that they existed. I mean, prior to radio astronomy, we had no idea of everything what is going on in the corona.
Right.
Of course, the optical flare was known and the sunspots, but nobody had could have predicted that there existed something like a noise storm or these huge outbursts. From these observations, we got to know that there are energetic particles in the corona which are trapped in magnetic fields and sometimes escape. All these things, I think, became known through radio astronomy.
Right. So it focused attention on the corona as opposed to the photosphere where optical astronomy was primarily concerned, would you say? Or?
Yes, optical astronomy is limited to the chromosphere. Of course, there were optical pictures made during total solar eclipses, so it was known that the corona, that there is a certain density and temperature. Of course, it was known that the corona has a temperature of about 1,000,000 degrees. So it was not strange that things were going on in the corona. Of course, it was known that radio emission could only escape from the corona, not from the photosphere. And so the quiet sun radio emission was not a surprise. This might more or less have been predicted. This was
an interview with Fokker on 13 September 1978.